Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. If you have never heard of my show, you can head over to the show blog. I started the show in 2011, hard to believe. And here we are, and I'm excited to bring my next guest on. He's been on before, but he's got a lot of great news to share. Ivan Williams is joining us. He's an award-winning producer, entrepreneur, and change maker, and he's joining us now. Good morning, Ivan.
Good morning, Janine.
Live from your car.
sound great. Driving to San Diego.
You sound great. You know what? Like I said, people have called in from tunnels from other countries, so it's perfect.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's the mobile society we live in.
Yes, absolutely. So you've been on my show several times, and you've got a lot going on. I don't know how you sleep. So what's been happening with you? You just have taken off in the film industry.
Well, I can't remember the last time I was on your show, but my gosh, actually 2023 and 2024, and now 2025, it just kind of really exploded on my horizon here. So since we last talked, I've got a number of projects that hit the screen in both production as well as theatrical release. So I've been continuing to produce a lot of great content, both documentary and narrative stuff. So we started in 2023 with the release or the premiere of a film called Ramona at Midlife. Mm-hmm. It's kind of about a middle-aged woman who's now a mom and almost a single mom who began her life in the 20s as a New York Times bestseller, but she thought that would just continue, but it didn't. And she finds herself as an unemployed vet tech with a child with no husband.
Yeah.
And writes to her fan favorite, Patti Smith, and saying, how did you navigate life's challenges? So we premiered that Bentonville Film Festival. I had Gina Davis introduced the film, which is fantastic. And this is a Brooke Berman written and directed film, and Kristen Vaganos produced, and executive produced it with my partner Matthew Spain and several other people.
Okay.
But we released the film earlier this year on your favorite streaming platforms, Amazon,
fantastic,
Apple TV, and Google Play.
Exciting.
So that was the narrative, commercial, good stuff. But in the meantime, I ended up partnering with an absolute fantastic marine anthropologist named Dr. Shireen Rahimi.
Mm-hmm.
She's a National Geographic explorer, filmmaker, and we made a couple climate change shorts, one called A Letter from Nature of Ecocide, and we ended up premiering that at a big arts festival in Miami Beach in 2022, end of 2022, but then it was picked up by the Aspen Institute. They loved it and had it showcased at their Aspen Climate Summit in Miami in 2023, and people like Vice President Harris and others got to see the film.
That's great.
It's about it's a poetic statement about climate change anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So it really taps into the kind of that
timely
vibe.
Very timely. I just want to jump in and tell listeners a little bit about your background, Ivan. I'm speaking with Ivan Williams. He's an award-winning producer, entrepreneur, and changemaker. But your backstory is you're a veteran in the Naval Reserve Intelligence Department. Is that correct? You were an officer?
Yes, there we go.
Mm-hmm. You have a BS in chemical engineering from Oregon State University, an MBA from right here, UC Irvine. You co-founded Eco Art Lab and Eco Design Lab.
Super yeah. Cool. Those are my nonprofit opportunities. Yeah.
Great. And I feel like it's all integrated.
Yeah. I know you go, wow, there's a lot of wide ranging stuff here, but there are some underpinnings of really about trying to tell not only entertaining stories, it's where we all love storytelling, but, and that can be on the screen or stage or, even just audio. Because I just feel that the format of film and as well as podcast, as well as live theater, are just such a big megaphone to communicate, life's joys, life's tragedies, life's challenges, right?
Sure.
We live in a world now that, how do we communicate our passions that connect to our head and heart? So anyway, that's the connection. And of course, underpinning that is I'm a climate change activist and want to get that message out.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about your most recent film, because you won the equivalent of the Oscars for in Germany.
We've got a nomination on May 9th. So a film I co-executive produced called Cologne 75. It premiered at the Berlin Film Festival. I'd not say a biopic, but a drama based around a young 17-year-old girl in Germany back in 1975 who told her parents she's not going to go to college and become a lawyer or a doctor. She's going to become a music promoter. And, of course, that created lots of tension in the family, and her father's a dentist, and that's not the way that they had their plan for their daughter.
Right.
So she said, that's fine. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. So at age 17, she ended up promoting and creating, actually at this time, the most iconic jazz concert in history with Keith Jarrett at the Cologne Opera House in 1975.
It's actually
a historic concert. This young woman pulled this off with hardly any experience with one of the legendary jazz musicians. So Cologne 75 headlined the Berlin Film Festival this year in February. And 4 weeks later, we were in almost 200 theaters in Germany, and we're going to have a worldwide release later this year. And then we were nominated for what the German equivalent of the Oscars for Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Editing. And on May 9th, we find out if we walk away with any hardware.
Incredible.
But we're absolutely incredibly proud of this film. It's an Ido Fluke-directed, written film, and it's really quite something. And it will be coming to America in the future.
I can't wait. So tell me about your role in this film.
Yeah, I'm a co-executive producer. In this regard, is really bringing more financial support for the film to the money to the project. This is Oren Moverman, who's an Academy Award-winning producer, is on the project, and a friend of mine. I am viewed as an independent filmmaker with my own production companies, but I don't have the big studio backing. So in these independent films, it's all about, you know, raising capital to get them up on the screen, right?
Sure.
So you've got to hustle and work your contacts and networks to get people motivated to, you know, make an investment in a film.
I watched the trailer. I put the trailer up on the show blog for those of you listening.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I loved it. I just loved the whole storyline. It's so funny and exciting. And what does it feel to have it out in the world?
Yeah, it's even though it's, you know, about Keith Jarrett's concert, it's all about Vera Brandis, the young lady.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we don't have any Keith Jarrett music in the movie. It's about her and her abilities and her chutzpah to pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, I couldn't make it to Berlin, but I know it was a fantastic premiere. We sold out all five screenings in a matter of 90 seconds.
What?
When the film went up at the Berlin Film Festival.
That's wild.
And these are 1,000-seat theaters that the film was playing in. It actually, we set a record in Germany for the first week, and it was in theaters and had the highest average theater viewership at the theaters.
So how did that happen? Like, what do you contribute that to? That's outstanding.
Well, the real key thing is that, you know, it's a German story, first and foremost, an iconic German story. To be honest, when I was approached about the project, I hadn't even heard of the story before. But when I dug into it, I was at the American Film Market 2 years ago, and I was talking to people from France and Italy and bringing it up, and they just literally go, oh, my gosh, the Cologne Keith Jarrett concert, everyone knows about it except for me. I go, wow, where was I when all this was going on? I was in high school when that happened.
Exactly.
But anyway, so it really kind of over the last 2 years, it's a German produced, the lead production companies, 1-2 films out of Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who've produced, you know, Cannes and Venice Festival level films, very high quality filmmakers. And of course, I think the element of this is a young woman that's setting her own course in life, right?
Yes.
Kind of
yes.
pushing back against what her parents. So the independence, the strength of independence, a young woman, you know, setting her own course and not being dictated to how she's going to live her life.
No,
that really
that.
Resonates with the people.
Great message. I want to back way up and ask you when you first became interested in filmmaking.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's interesting. The Cologne 75 movie, 1975, that's kind of going back when I was a senior in high school and before the digital age. And so I was in the film club in Monterey High School in Monterey, California. And we had a little film club, a little film festival. I had my father's Super 8 camera and did stop motion animation and
nice.
And all that. And really enjoyed, you know, it's almost more of a hobby because I guess somewhat talented in the math and sciences. And, you know, again, my course pathway into college was, okay, what am I going to be doing? And it really more focused on the engineering and technical side. So the filmmaking kind of was put to the side for many years. But when I ended up retiring from BP, that kind of the calling came back in my head after from 1975 in 2011, jumped into the real filmmaking world. And so it kind of was, you know, it was idling there in the back of my mind for all those years. And then now I was in a position to really execute and now really hit go for my dream on this. And my wife and I ended up being a major equity owner in a small independent film studio in Hollywood. And that's kind of set the course for the last, 14 years.
I love that. So what did your life look like when you graduated here from UCI?
Well, yeah, so I went into it was called the Graduate School of Management back in 1994. I was working for ARCO. They sent me over to the UCR Graduate School of Management to get my MBA in the Executive MBA program. And so at that time, I'd spent 14 years as doing very technical process computer control work as an engineer, a chemical engineer in the refineries of ARCO. But when I got my MBA, I made a pivot in my career that I went more in the business side of the house and then left the MBA program in 96, my degree, and got into the ARCO procurement business, in essence, managing and creating strategic relations with suppliers for our refineries, both the chemicals and catalysts and pipe valves and fittings and compressors. So
okay.
Very technical work. They want, you know, kind of transforming the purchasing department to a procurement. So then when BP acquired ARCO in 2000, I continued that kind of world, but at the global level, I was the global director of the e-procurement initiative for BP's downstream organization. And they ended up flying all over the world for 10 years every week.
Whoa.
So then we unfortunately had the very disastrous Gulf of Mexico situation in 2010. And needed to trim the executive staff, so got the opportunity to retire early from life. But my wife was not going to put up with me in the house. And she said, what are you going to do? And I said, we're going to get in the film business. And she kind of really gave me the eagle eye stare. What are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you really going to do?
What do you know about that business? I said, well, I love the product. But more importantly, I ran a gigantic organization, BP, and I know to run large companies. So I came in this business totally, you know, not with a film background, but with a business background. And so more the executive producer. But over the last 14 years, I've morphed into a creative producer, too. So that's
very
interesting. A chemical engineer that now, who really didn't care that much about English classes, is now, oh, I wish I really paid attention.
Oh, that's so funny.
During those English classes.
That's so funny. I really love your nonlinear life. I think that's the best kind of life to have, truthfully.
Yeah, you just go, wow, how did I get here? Like, I don't know. I think it's like really being open to new opportunities. And when I look at that life of even my colleagues, engineering colleagues, like, well, why would you go into procurement? That's like you're deserting your engineering profession. I said, well, I'm looking at new opportunities. And actually, UC Irvine Business School really gave me that kind of confidence and vision to look at a whole broad set of opportunities. I really, it was transformative for me.
That's such an interesting story because I always tell the students I work with or anyone really that to have these different experiences, you might think that they don't lead to something, but in actuality, they just might.
Yeah, you know, unless you try, and I kind of in that space of why not, you know?
Yeah.
As an independent filmmaker, there's not like a straight, narrow pathway how I find content to develop. I go to a social gathering, I go to a meeting, I end up talking to someone, oh, they pique my interest with the story. We then maybe have a follow-up conversation. Mm-hmm. That's actually how I made one of my climate change films 2 years ago. I was at a Day Before Academy Award event where I was on a panel in Beverly Hills, and I met another fellow panelist as I'm getting my car keys at the valet stand, and he ended up financing a short film about Bermuda conservation.
Really?
I ended up being flown to Bermuda a couple times. Last year we flew to Bermuda to screen the movie, and actually he flew us to, my director, Dr. Shereen Rahimi, and I, to Dubai to present the film at the COP28 conference at the end of 2023.
That's outstanding.
So, you know, that one encounter ended up leading to this amazing film that now is won a bunch of awards around a bunch of festivals around the world now.
Yes. So. I wanted to ask you this, Ivan. Have you seen a difference in people, the way they're communicating post-COVID? Because a lot of times in my interactions or just from what I'm hearing, you know, things have been very different as far as how people communicate, the way they communicate.
Well, I tell you, my world is like not only filmmaking, but it's the distribution model. And that has been radically impacted by, as you would say, how do we as filmmakers even communicate to an audience?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, obviously with COVID, everyone, you know, hunkered down their home, their residence, and started just digging into streaming content. And, you know, as we came out of COVID, like, what happened to theatrical?
Yes.
You know, way. And, you know, everyone probably upgraded their home, you know, audio visual systems. And, you know, just that feeling, I've been in my house for a couple of years, and why do I need to go to a theater? For us as filmmakers, that's obviously the big issue. You know, no one enters the film business generally going, I want to put a film on a cell phone.
I know.
The goal is to be in a big theatrical release, right?
Yes.
And they struggle. And then you have, you know, companies like Netflix that have, you know, totally transformed that business.
Completely.
But many of their, you know, top filmmakers still demand, they want a limited theatrical release,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think it gives us an opportunity to transition. What is that experience? You know, as we see it now, a lot of theaters, the Alamo Drafthouse, make it more of an experience of a nice, comfortable seat. You get food, you can order, you know, beverages in your seat. But it just can't be just a seat and expensive, you know,
exactly,
buttery popcorn. You know, it's got to be something special. And we want to make it more than just tentpole movies, you know, the big Marvel or DC comic movies, something to go out to the theater and see. I'm a bit old school. I do occasionally, but I haven't gone to the theater much. But to go to certain movies, I want to go see it in the theater.
Yes, I agree.
At the same token, the opportunity now, as we have all these different screens to communicate, namely cell phones and mobile phones, and reaching people different formats. And I think the bigger one is, I saw a movie last summer, a documentary, hour and a half long documentary about these two Russian young adults that were climbing skyscrapers. And the person on the screen is a Russian young man. He said to the filmmaker, like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm filming this documentary, an hour and a half long. And he looked at the filmmaker and says, who watches an hour and a half long documentary? So that's kind of the world.
That's so funny. That's what you're up against.
Yep. So, but telling a story, we just can't tell a good story in 2 minutes.
Yes. Although, look at commercials. I mean, I always, you know, a commercial is amazing. They can tell a story in 60 seconds and give us all
exactly.
these feelings, you know.
Now we have to start, you know, some of the movies that are now 3 hour, 3.5 hour long
yes.
movies.
I know. So tell me what else you're working on, which is a lot.
So last year I premiered a movie at the Big Sky Doc Festival in Montana called The Wonder and Worry. It's my alma mater, Oregon State University, asked me to produce a documentary about a former editor-in-chief of the National Geographic magazine named Chris Johns and his daughter Louise, who's a known photojournalist. And it was a beautiful film. It's kind of about the transition from print to digital in the National Geographic world. And that's going to be released later this year. And I premiered two films at South by Southwest last year. One was called How to Build a Truth Engine. It's about misinformation, disinformation, and an AI tool that UCLA and Berkeley jointly developed in a doctoral project called StoryMiner that combats combats misinformation, not
okay.
creating it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and George Clooney and his partner, Grant Heseloff, were our executive producers. I was a producer of the film mm-hmm. and their Smokehouse Pictures. So that film is a very dense. It's talking the journalism aspect, but also probes into the neuroscience of, how do we process information.
Interesting.
And we have been taking this film out to a number of festivals in Europe. In fact, this May, in about 2 weeks, we're presenting it to the European Commission and the European Parliament.
Wow.
And again, we're using this as an advocacy program, obviously, to deal with a very serious issue in our society. We're working on, working on a distribution plan for the film.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's kind of a very dense, rich, in-depth probe of a very, concerning topic. The other film, which was a sensation at the South by Southwest Film Festival, was called Secret Mall Apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a wild one. Back in 2003, a group of artists in Providence, Rhode Island, snuck inside a gigantic mall and created an apartment.
I love this.
And they lived in it for four. They lived in it on and off for 4 years before being discovered.
4 years.
4 years. In 2007, when they were discovered, the artist Michael Townsend, who's a renowned tape artist, he does these tape murals all around the world. He was banned for life from the mall after they discovered him and his fellow RISD student.
So funny.
But we released the movie to theatrical release on March 21st this year, and guess where? In the mall multiplex that we
really?
The secret mall apartment.
That's hysterical. So was he allowed back in for the screening?
Well, yep, and the mall, as you know, malls have been struggling.
Yes.
The mall management embraced it greatly and officially welcomed him back to the mall.
As they should, bringing revenue and people, yes.
Good. So it's now in over 100 screens across America. It's, Alamo Drafthouse, independent theaters, not, the Regals or AMCs, but independent theaters. And it's been an absolute, we are now the fifth highest grossing documentary since the pandemic.
That's incredible, Ivan. Wow.
And we self-distribute. We basically had a theater booker book the theaters. And so this wasn't through your normal, distributor channels. We mm-hmm. book theaters, and the film plays for at least a week or as long as they sell tickets. And it's out there. It's been in L.A., New York, everywhere. So every week we keep growing more theaters. It
Amazing.
Seems that it's a story that really kind of it puts a point on the gentrification of our communities.
Yes.
About artists who are saying, hey, wait a second. I don't want you tearing down the place that we live and play
mm-hmm.
in, right? We
mm-hmm.
and create our these big block malls. And as we see the landscape of malls, they're dying. So
That's
it's
right.
about a group of American and artists, these artists taking a stand against gentrification of their community. So it seems like it's really hit a vibe with Americans
mm-hmm.
with this film.
That's great. Okay, we have to wrap up soon, but I have one last question. So for UCI students listening that want to go in the film industry, what advice would you give them?
Well, first and foremost, the beauty of everyone today, we all have cell phones. We can make our own movies. Every one of us have a device that can make an Oscar-winning movie on our hip. So shoot, just go ahead. It's like exercising at the gym. Get out there, tell a story, create a story, shoot it, and work it like at a gym. And so that's building your portfolio. Start building your portfolio, putting your content out there. We have all this YouTube. You can put content out there. It's a way to pilot test your content, right? You got
sure.
TikTok. You have an audience. You can build an audience, which was impossible 40 years ago.
Right.
So just get out there and get your content out, build an audience. You don't need to make a multi-million dollar film, this first film. You just shoot it and get it out there, get a response, and you build an audience. And so, you can get people to finance it. Go on various, independent crowdsourcing means to get people to back your project and give them a t-shirt if they back your project. So there's so many different ways to get your story told in a cinematic way now that, was non-existent 40 years ago.
So true.
But anyway, I think it's just getting out there, tell your story. And like I said, we all have devices to shoot the film. So don't let that be the challenge that you have to overcome. You got it.
Great advice.
But, yeah, I mean, it's great. I do want to tell you about an amazing project we do have up coming up, and it's called Coal Country. It's about a documentary I'm doing with Steve Earle and my partner Matthew Spain, and we're working on it. It's about the coal mine disaster in West Virginia in 2010 that killed 29 miners. And we're telling the story about people who say enough's enough, that these people, we need to have respect and decent jobs and make sure we're not damaging the environment. So coal country's on horizon, and we got another movie, Host Country, that's coming up with a post-apocalyptic Handmaid's Tale type of tone to it, and we'll tell you about that at a future project, a future session.
Good, good. No, I'd love to have you back on. Well, I want to thank you so much for calling in. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, you know, you can go to my LinkedIn website, Ivan Williams on LinkedIn, or you can go on my IMDb profile page and see my various projects that I've done in the past and the ones that are coming up, and keep on track of what's going on. But Wild Brush Media is my new company. I formed two production companies the last 2 years, and Wild Brush Media is the recent one, and we'll see what happens. And
exciting.
Secret Mall is our banner. Secret Mall Apartments is our first feature under Wild Brush Media's banner, so we're
amazing.
Pretty happy.
Congratulations. So exciting.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show today.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right. We will talk soon. Congratulations
on
everything.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
That was Ivan Williams. He was sharing all kinds of incredible projects that he has going on. And again, he's an award-winning producer, entrepreneur, and change maker. This conversation will be up later on. And you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you're not familiar with our eclectic mix of shows, you can head over to our website at KUCI.org and follow our socials, KUCI FM. And my show blog is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. We're going to take a little break. And then joining me is director for the Center of Student Wellness and Health Promotion, Doug Everhart. He's going to be joining me to talk about the Comprehensive Wellbeing Initiative Town Hall coming up May 7th right here at UCI. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.